We are reporting exclusively here at WCCO Radio. The Vikings are 14-2. Does anybody else have it, Dave Arrigan? I don't think they do.
Seen on the internet.
I don't think so. How about this guy, Mr. Purple Insider, Matthew Cullen? If you beat the Packers for a second time, you beat the Packers kind of the same way. You build up a big lead, and then you're hanging out for dear life. If you're staring at the number one seed, you know what you do the Monday after the game? You start the show with Collar. You start the show with Purple Insider. Football. Matthew Collar, it is 27-25. There's 2 minutes and 13 seconds left in the clock. And I tweeted out what everybody was thinking. How aggressive is Kevin O'Connell going to be? How aggressive is he going to be? Because the old style of thinking, which you love, you're not a modern guy like Arrigan and I. You kind of think like in the 50s, you would have run the ball three times and punted. And you wrote about it today, purpleinsider.football. I read the story today. O'Connell's trust in Darnold pays off again versus Packers because that's what he did. He trusted Darnold to make good decisions. One of those decisions involved maybe his worst pass of the year, but Akers caught it. Just talk about that part of the game and that relationship and the trust that Darnold has built up.
Yeah, I think if you were trying to distill the Kevin O'Connell Coach of the Year conversation down into one drive, I mean, there's a lot of them that might qualify this year, but every single one of them involves him trusting Sam Darnold. I mean, even think about all the way back to week one, the Vikings have a fourth down inside the 10-yard line or something against the Giants. Could have kicked a field goal, could have taken the points, and he's like, no, I'm going to throw the ball. Yep. Into the end zone with Sam Darnold and Justin Jefferson to get the touchdown. And the number of times that they've done that, how about, what was it, week two, 97-yard touchdown pass. You don't get that unless you throw the ball from the 3-yard line and try to throw a bomb. He has leaned into Sam Darnold's arm, his talent, and then what he's really come to trust is his decision-making. And there was one bad throw last night that resulted in an interception, but the accumulation of that entire game is a lot of really smart and great decisions by Sam Darnold. And I think that's where he's grown the most throughout this season is that he is protecting the football, but he's also throwing to the right places. They're executing not just deep shots like they were earlier this year, but also the underneath and short stuff. And why not in that moment trust Sam Darnold to roll to the outside, use his athleticism, and make a couple of plays there. And I think that, you're right that the throw to Akers wasn't good.
No.
But the throw to Jefferson to get them 9 yards there to set up that's high level. That's fantastic. We just saw Sam Darnold put on one of those type of shows that, Vikings fans will remember for a really, really long time. And that doesn't happen if you have a coach who's trying to play it safe and just survive and play defense. That's been Kevin O'Connell's mantra from day one. I'm going to lean into Darnold. I'm going to be aggressive. And that's why they're here at 14-2.
You nailed it. We've talked about it. I've talked about Chip a lot, too, where there were just so many moments during the season. And sometimes they all didn't work. But he set this as a part of who they were going to be, that I'm going to trust you. I'm going to trust you. And even on the interception, Matthew, you can absolutely make the argument, you've got that big lead, why you're trying to squeeze into small spots. That's what they've done all year. And Darnold is oozing confidence right now. So he tried small spot. I've been doing it all year. He gets the pressure. The throw is a little short, and it starts the comeback. And again, if they lose, we're going to look back and shake our heads on that, and it's a fair discussion point. But to me, Matt, that's a continuation of this conversation that Darnold, O'Connell, and O'Connell's belief in other players on both sides of the ball, be aggressive. I'm going to trust your skills and your intellect. I know it's not going to work every time, but in the long run, it's going to work out significantly more than it doesn't. And even though it didn't work there, I think that's just another example of how he's coached this team.
Yeah, there's certainly times throughout the season, maybe one of them goes back to the Jets when he threw an interception on 3rd and 18 or something, and he's pushing it down the field, where I think that Kevin O'Connell maybe needs to rein it in a little bit with this approach. I mean, this is kind of like if you have in baseball, if you have a home run hitter, but you kind of just need them to get a sacrifice fly and not strike out, and sometimes they strike out. But in the long run, over a full season, having the home run hitter is so much better than having the guy who hits singles and bunts guys over from first to second.
Yep.
Just worth so much more. So every time one of those mistakes happen, we can always say, oh, well, look at that. That almost blew it. But we forget about the five, six other times in a game where they were aggressive and it ended up working out. And O'Connell has leaned into this almost comically at times. Sam Darnold against the Seahawks gets banged up the next play. I don't care if you got hurt. You're running a play action where you got to drop back and step up. I mean, he has just continued to swing as hard as he can for the fences. And why not? I mean, this is a super, super gifted quarterback with incredible receivers. Even Jalen Naylor stepping up big for them. They've got all the talent in the world to put up these big numbers and big yards like Darnold did, and it just seems like his confidence keeps growing and growing with every one of these games. So why not treat him like he's Joe Burrow, like he's Josh Allen, like he's Lamar Jackson? All those teams lean into their quarterback the same way.
Yep.
That's the level that he's playing right now, so they should do the same thing.
This is Matthew Collar. He runs Purple Insider. You can check it out online, purpleinsider.football. Great analysis right after the game. Great stories today. Podcasts throughout the week. Interviews throughout the week. And a lot of stuff coming up with the Lions looming. We'll talk Lions, and we'll also talk the reaction that Darnold received after he participated in multiple interviews. And if someone's going to convince me that he's not on this team next year, good luck to you. Because he's going to be on this team next year, in my view. It's 17 past 12 on CCO. Continuing the dialogue with our guy Matthew Collar from Purple Insider. We've all watched the videos now. Darnold sits down with, or does a, if we want to be precise, standing interview with Tom Rinaldi. Then he talks to Tom Brady. And then they greet him in the locker room as a conquering hero. They love the guy. They're lifting him up. You're honestly telling me this guy isn't going to be the starting quarterback next year? Can we just end that debate right now, Matthew Collar, at 12-21? They're 14-2. He's 27. You're right. He's playing like a top five or six quarterback. They still like J.J. Most likely they would keep J.J. for a couple of years. I might even get riskier and see what I could get for a first-round draft choice. But he's going to be their starting quarterback next year, right?
Yeah. I mean, they've just gone way too far to not have that be the case.
Correct.
I mean, what the thing is that throughout NFL history, there's all sorts of instances of teams thinking they had their quarterback and then being like, oh, I guess it's this other guy. I mean, the 49ers are a good recent example of this with Brock Purdy, that they drafted Trey Lance and they go to the Super Bowl with Brock Purdy. And I mean, even if you go back, there's been times throughout history where top draft pick quarterbacks didn't become great until they were in their late or mid 20s, or even Steve Young didn't become an elite quarterback till he was 30 years old. You know, Drew Brees needed time and the right situation. And sometimes I think it's funny when we talk about, like, well, you know, he's got all the receivers and stuff. It's like, I find me an elite quarterback who doesn't. Maybe Josh Allen, I guess.
It.
But I mean,
rare.
All time. But if that quarterback is maximizing those receivers the way that Sam Darnold is, then you don't move on. And I know that everybody's a capologist now.
Yeah.
But I think that what maybe you don't realize is that everything that they have is staying, and that they've been dealing with $70 million of dead cap this year. They
this
did
year.
This with
yes.
all that dead cap space. So also look around. All the teams in the playoffs, except for Washington, all have quarterbacks who have been paid. So I don't think that it's some sort of impossible thing to work around. But this is franchise quarterback behavior. I think the quarterback he reminds me the most of this year is actually Andrew Luck. The way he's handled himself, the way he handles the media, the way he throws downfield, the way he makes plays. It is a top draft pick quarterback coming into his own. We saw this from Alex Smith. Remember how bad he was, how bad the coaching was with Mike Singletary, and then Jim Harbaugh comes in. He takes them to the NFC Championship. So it's not the first time we've ever seen it happen, and it won't be the last. And I think people do have to wrap their minds around, he really is this good. There isn't some other shoe that's about to drop, not somebody with this talent and this approach to the game.
Okay, 26-9. That's Kevin O'Connell about to finish his third season in one score games. If they beat Detroit in a one score game, and none of that would shock us, he then becomes the all-time leader for winning percentage in one score games in the history of the league. I get some numbers are fickle. The number isn't large enough. There's going to be a reaching to the mean if you play enough. This is 35 games. There has to be something a little different where he deserves this type of credit when you're 26-9. That is a stunning record in 8 points or less.
Yeah, I think that those stats can be very funny because, like, I'll give you two examples. The Arizona game, the Vikings were not the better team. They got outplayed that day.
I agree with you.
And then pulled it out of their hat at the end, and Kyler Murray gave them an interception. They kind of lucked out. Yesterday, would anyone watch that football game and argue the Green Bay Packers were better? No. The Vikings, through the second quarter, had a 99% chance to win that game. And that's really kind of the nature of the beast in the NFL, which I think is why we get all these one-score games, is that protecting leads is really difficult because you have quarterbacks like Jordan Love who can make plays and have big arms and can bring a team back like he did. And a lot of the Vikings' one-score wins are just like that, even this year. So you could say, okay, in the long run, with all teams, all history, those games come out 50-50. But when the Vikings are outplaying people and then they're coming back at the end when they really didn't have any chance to actually win, I don't look at that as the same as a one-score game. So I think that's been a lot of them through O'Connell's history, but I also think it's kind of what we talked about in the last segment, is that if you keep the gas pedal down, a lot of times that's going to work out better than if you try to play it super safe and then ultimately end up giving up leads. And we've seen it from Dan Campbell as well, sometimes to a comical degree from Dan Campbell. But look at the results. Look at the overall. Yep. I mean, it's just, I'm sure when Steph Curry first started shooting threes from almost half court, I'm sure someone went, well, there's no way he could keep doing this.
Yeah, right.
And then he did, because sometimes breaking the game works. So I think that they've done that a little bit, and that's part of the reason. I also think that he had a clock mismanagement yesterday at halftime. Mm. How many of those has he had, though? That
Rare.
Was a weekly thing, very weekly thing with Mike Zimmer.
Yes.
I think he's actually been quite good when it comes to managing the timeouts, the late-game situations, and there's another thing here, too. His quarterbacks are pretty damn confident at the end of games, and who does that come back to? I think Kevin O'Connell.
Let's finish with next Sunday night. Now, Campbell claimed all week he was going to play his main guys tonight against San Francisco in a totally meaningless game. He probably will, because that's just who he is. It's just the impact of this game. We got it. You go from a number one seed to the number five. You could be staring maybe at the Rams. You could be staring at the Buccaneers. Just analyze how vitally important it is for this team to win Sunday night. Or is Matthew Collar from Purple Insider going to tell me, you know what, it's important, but it might not be as important as some people are telling us?
Oh, no, it's pretty dang important. I mean, you're talking about getting to stay home for a week and never have to leave U.S. Bank Stadium with this team, with this defense, with that stadium. Oh, yeah, that is a massive, massive advantage versus having to go on the road. I mean, the Eagles they went on the road to Tampa Bay last year and lost because that's a good team in Tampa Bay. It's a good team in Los Angeles. They already lost there this year. You don't want to do that. So it is enormous. You know what this actually screams to me is eventual rule change. You know how the Vikings are always involved in the rule changes? Either way, this is going to happen. A 14-3 team, whether it's the Vikings or Lions, is going to have to go on the road and play a team that barely got into the playoffs. I mean, this hasn't made sense in a long time, and maybe Roger Goodell will wake up after this. But if they go on the road, though, we have seen this team perform on the road. They've beaten teams. They've gotten clutch performances. They're better than the Rams. They're better than the Bucks. But the margins are so, so thin. I mean, you're really just sitting there hoping, if you're Kevin O'Connell, that you can find a way to win in Detroit. And I think that the matchup, though, mid-season was Detroit, I think, was the better team. But right now, I think it is very even between these two teams. Yep. And small factor, if Campbell does go full man Campbell and plays all of his starters the whole game, they have less rest. I mean, it's a Monday night.
Right.
They got to travel back. I mean, it's going to be a little harder on Detroit. So the door is certainly open for the Vikings to punch it through, get 15, and we can talk while I'm sitting at home next week with them.
We'll actually talk to you Friday. I mean, the game means so much. It's a double shot of collar.
Whoa.
And we'll triple your pay because of it. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm just going to leave that one. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Matthew Collar. Our guy, Tom Hauser. We're pretty sure Tom's going to join us. Now, normally we say pretty sure because it's tough to get a hold of him on the phone. But Tom had a bad fall this morning on the ice before he came in here. And we talked before the show, and he's dealing with that. So hopefully Tom is with us. And again, no matter what, out of nowhere, the Major Garrett Open somehow plays with our system. You can't make it up. Or maybe we'll just call Major. Who knows? Hopefully Hauser next. There we go. Let's bring Tom into conversation. Like Matthew, like all our guests, he's on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Do you want to tell people where you are right now? And we are not kidding.
I am in St. Louis Park in the parking lot of an imaging center where I'm going to get a CT scan and have a much long overdue examination of my head.
Yeah.
My wife has been clamoring for this for years, and now I'm finally going to go have it done.
So have I been. As someone who's known you for about 30 years, the viewers, it's about time. No, I was working, so I didn't have a chance to listen to you, but I looked at the text line, and you had a fall today. You had a serious fall. Tell people what happened. And then you came in and did the show, and now you're on with me again. I mean, your commitment to this station is unrivaled by anyone. Tell people what happened.
Well, you're not the first one who says I should be committed.
But yeah.
You're just the latest one.
Yeah, that's fair.
Let's just put it this way. I have spent 25 years putting ice rinks in my backyard.
Yeah.
And have never had a fall like I did today in my driveway, going out to see if the newspaper was out there at about 5:25 this morning. I took a couple of steps and black ice on my asphalt driveway. And before you know, I was on my asphalt. I don't even know what happened. It just was that quick. And so I've already been to one urgent care where it turns out I have one broken bone in my little finger on my right hand. And then they did x-rays of my ribs, and I have severe contusion, but nothing broken, although they sure feel like they're broken. And I passed all the concussion protocols, but because of the fall, they want me to get a CT scan to make sure there's no bleeding on the brain or anything. But I think I'll be fine, but better to be safe than sorry, as the tried and true saying goes.
How do you feel right now?
You know, other than when I breathe, my ribs are a little sore.
Yeah.
And my daughter kind enough to drive me
very
here
nice
today while my wife is at work.
Yeah.
And it's sore, and it's weird. You know, I've never broken a bone until today. I've never had a stitch, never spent a night in the hospital. I mean, I just, you know, other than when my kids were born. And so this is all kind of new to me. And but I did feel a little lightheaded in the doctor's office. And so they gave me some juice and graham crackers. And, of course, the graham crackers go down the wrong pipe. And so I had to cough And then my ribs hurt even more.
So it's going to be a fun
couple of days. I can already tell. Luckily, the weather's been so warm.
Yeah.
My ice rink is a pool.
Yeah.
My driveway is an ice rink.
Yeah.
So
can I tell you something?
Only in Minnesota.
I probably shouldn't tell you this, but about 10 years ago, I set up a camera outside your house just to monitor things. And I did see your wife out there with the garden hose at about 4:30 this morning on your driveway.
I wondered where she had gone.
Yeah, I
assumed she was down making me coffee for my morning radio shift.
Yes.
And I thought she was icing the driveway.
Yeah, this also might be the lesson. There's this new thing called the internet. Get rid of the home-delivered paper. I did.
Yeah.
I did this year. No offense, Star Tribune. I'm still paying for the internet, you know, the e-version. Get rid of it, Tom. Cut the cord.
I'm just so old school. I love sitting in front of the TV, reading the paper. I used to read your dad's column. It used to be one of the first things I'd read from the time I was a kid until, you know, your dad stopped writing. And, you know, so it's just a habit, but this may break me of that habit. I will still subscribe, still pay my fee, but, yeah, maybe it's time to quit venturing down to the end of the driveway on icy mornings.
Yeah.
To any of the listeners out there, especially in the West Metro, it was way foggier and more damp there than it was in downtown. Downtown, the sidewalks were dry.
Yep.
In the West Metro, slick as could be. Side streets, sidewalks, everything. So be careful.
I heard that from multiple friends this morning who are communicating with me about how difficult the roads were out west. Let's get to other health matters. And you know I wish you only the best, and I will only kid you because I care for you so much. But let's start local, and then let's get to former President Jimmy Carter. But let's talk with Kerry Dedzic. This hits home with your family. I know it does. Kerry Dedzic, just a few years ago, is the Senate Majority Leader, part of the trifecta, bills passing, Democrat, well-liked by both sides, philosophically people disagreeing with her, and she ends up succumbing to cancer. It was ovarian cancer, and the news broke this weekend. It's just a very sad story and a reminder of how cancer, when you think you can be having some success with it, how it just doesn't leave you in circumstances, and you always have to be wary. It's a story that too many people have lived, and 62 is just way too young for Kerry Dedzic to pass away.
Yeah, and, you know, I had talked to her about this not long after her diagnosis because, as you know, my sister passed away of the same thing. My sister Maggie was able to battle it for almost 6 years. Kerry Dedzic, I believe, was less than two.
Yes,
hers
correct.
Was much faster. She was only a couple years older than my sister. But it's such a difficult disease because there are no good early detection tests for it. Sometimes you'll find it randomly when they're looking for something else. When my sister was diagnosed, she was in for what she thought was just an ovarian cyst that would be benign.
Mm-hmm.
Turned out it was ovarian cancer. And so the researchers are working on a way to try to come up with an early test, you know, like they're trying with a lot of these pancreatic and other cancers. And so this morning on the show, one of the reasons I really wanted to come in was we were going to talk about her with a representative from the Minnesota Ovarian Cancer Alliance, and I'm emceeing their gala, their fundraising gala in May. And so I really wanted to get in and talk about Senator Dedzic and my sister and ovarian cancer and what's being done in terms of research and for patient care and the care of the families of ovarian cancer patients.
When you think of Kerry Dedzic, and I've interviewed Kerry off and on for decades, to be honest, when you think of her as the person, you know, and you're interviewing her as a reporter, but then when it's this ovarian connection, then it's just two individuals who are sharing this, her and her own battle, and you and your sister and Maggie's passing. What stood out to you in that area? Not just the politics, but just Kerry Dedzic, the human.
You know, she rose to be the Senate Majority Leader, and she didn't do it through divisive, biting politics. She was, you know, in her temperament was very moderate, and that's kind of the way she was on issues. Now, did she lean left? Absolutely. But it was not a strident left.
Nope.
She would listen to the other side, and she was always so level-headed. And I always enjoyed working with her because she was not what I refer to as a flamethrower that you get on both the left and the right. She was somebody who worked hard to try to bring people together on issues. And I'm so glad one of the pieces of legislation she helped pass, and she authored it in the Senate, was to get health insurance to pay for wigs for cancer patients.
Right.
And not just women, but men and women, but primarily women when they lose their hair through radiation or chemo. And now that has to be covered. And I think that's very important because it has so much to do with your quality of life. And it was that type of legislation that means a lot to just the average person that she cared about the most.
Last thing, news breaks yesterday afternoon that the 39th president of the United States, Jimmy Carter, has passed away at the age of 100. When Tom Hauser thinks of Jimmy Carter, I'm sure plenty comes to mind. Give me the first two or three things you think of with Jimmy Carter.
Just a great human being, compassionate, cared more about others than he did for himself. When he left office, many former presidents serve on boards and they write books, and he did write many books, but not most of them as money-making ventures. He was just a simple man from Plains, Georgia. That's how he served for one term in office. I think historians will rate him and have rated him not as a great president, but maybe the greatest former president in terms of what he did after he left office, in terms of building homes for Habitat for Humanity, still trying to work on world peace like he did when he, you know, brokered Middle East peace, such as it was back in the late 70s. And I think that's what people are going to remember. Not a great president, but maybe the greatest former president.
Tom, send me a text later and let me know how you're doing. You know what I think of you, and a lot of us have faced this with the ice and the fall. So I really appreciate you coming on, but that pales in comparison to just getting the follow-up, making sure you're okay, and look forward to that. And Happy New Year, my friend.
And I'm so glad we got to talk about Carrie Diedzick and ovarian cancer because it's so important. Big gala coming up May 9th. You can go to the Minnesota Ovarian Cancer Alliance website and find out more about it.
We'll talk about that multiple times leading up to it because that definitely resonates with a lot of people, obviously with Maggie and people I know too. All right, man. Be well.
Okay. Happy New Year, Chad.
Tom Hauser. Speaking of the former president, Jimmy Carter, many people believe the definitive book on Jimmy Carter is this, his very best, Jimmy Carter, A Life. The man who wrote that book, Jonathan Alter, is going to join us at 2:05. So great work by Dave Harrigan, getting Jonathan Alter on the day after the former president passes away. Overrated, early next hour. How about Robert Smith? It's been a while since we talked to Robert. Seems like a pretty good day when the ball club's 14-2.
Yeah.
And staring at maybe the number one seed. But let's do this. I know some people are working, some people are not. We're here. We'll be here tomorrow. We will not be here Wednesday. But then back Thursday, Friday, at least I am. Are you with me this
week?
Yes,
I am.
Okay. When you think of Jimmy Carter, tell me what first comes to mind. 39th former president, 100 years of age, maybe he's selecting Fritz Mondale. Maybe he's selecting another potential, in this case, vice president of the United States from Minnesota. When you think of Jimmy Carter, and by the way, if you think of a presidency that you didn't agree with, that's allowed also. When you think of James Earl Carter from Plains, Georgia, what comes to mind? 651-461-9226. All right, what do we have here, Mr. Harrigan, for our musical theme?
We started with Stevie Wonder singing I Wish, which was the number one song January 20th, 1977, the day Jimmy Carter took the oath of office.
Yeah.
So we are going with number one songs at different points throughout the Carter presidency.
Oh, I like that.
Thank you.
And the timing was right for me to ask the question.
It worked okay.
It did work out. Among your texts, and the question again is, when you think of Jimmy Carter, what comes to mind? 651-461-9226. Billy Beer.
Yeah.
His brother, who is goofball. You know? We've had the goofball relatives who sometimes go beyond goofball to criminal.
Yes.
But, yeah, Billy Carter and the Beer, and then the texter says the Iranian hostage ordeal.
Sure.
That's number one, right? I mean, is it even close? Right? Maybe, you know, high inflation, high unemployment, a presidency. And Jonathan Alter is great work by you to get him on. He'll talk about other parts of the presidency. I know there's a debate. Some people feel like in hindsight that we're not giving him enough credit, including, obviously, what he did with Sadat and Begin, the Camp David Accords. But, again, I jotted the date down. Let me just remind myself of it. November 4th, 1979, the hostages, the 52 hostages, are captured in Iran. The failed attempt to get them. And how it just dominated our country. And it was like a shrinking president that he was overwhelmed by it. And then Reagan comes along and he looks the part and he's going to bring power back and nobody's going to challenge us. You know, there's one guy who's finally came forward in the last year or so, suggested the GOP was working with Iran behind the scenes to try to slow down a potential release. There are people who push back at that strongly. But guess what? When did they finally work out a deal? When were the hostages finally released? Just minutes after Reagan is inaugurated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Reagan, in a gesture that rarely would happen now, he sent Jimmy Carter. He asked him, do you want to be the person who greets them? Which was a very classy gesture by Reagan. Now, some Carter folks, if they believe Reagan was aware of, again, there are some people who believe the GOP was involved in slowing down the release, and others say that's outrageous. Seems like Reagan in his presidency sometimes would go to great length about what he knew and what he didn't know, but in this one, it was a very good gesture to have Carter there. But he couldn't overcome that. The start of Ted Koppel and Nightline, 100%. Because that's how Nightline started with Koppel. It was day 100. It was day 200. And finally, they spun away from just the Iranian hostage crisis, including the fact that they were released. And Ted Koppel became a remarkable journalist who was so involved in our lives. Is Nightline, is some combination of Nightline still on? I think it might be. But it, without Koppel, it's not the same. A great guy who just happened to maybe not be a great president.
Nightline's still around.
It is still around.
Juju Chang is leading it.
I think she's good, by the way.
Yeah.
The SNL skits with Carter. That was Aykroyd, right? So you had Chevy, and just him falling down is Ford, which basically that's all Chevy was good at. I walked in the...
I don't feel like you needed to do that right now.
Yeah, and he's just a lout of a human being, and he's not funny. We can add that again. When your greatest skill is just falling down and just being a jerk.
Great pratfaller.
Yeah, great pratfaller. Do we have a great pratfaller right now?
I don't think we do.
No.
I think people saw Chevy's work and said, I can't compete with it, so why try?
Hauser does not want to be known right now as a great pratfall.
No, I don't think there was a pratfall.
Yeah. How many other guests have we had who joined the show waiting for a CT scan? who the appointment had started but was committed to the show.
Many perhaps got a CT scan anyway, thinking, what was I doing going on the show?
Yeah. Habitat for Humanity. One of the few ex-presidents going to heaven. I'm reading your text here. Handsome, soft-spoken man. Peanut farmer. The only real Christian president in my lifetime. Reading a lot of your text here. Here's from Washington Post some things that might surprise you about Jimmy Carter. First future president born in a hospital.
I saw that yesterday.
How about that one? First president to be inaugurated by his nickname. He was inaugurated as James Earl.
That's right.
Jimmy. Married to his wife longer than any other presidential couple.
Incredible.
77 years.
Wow.
He installed solar heating panels on the roof of the White House. Peanut One, that's what they called it, set the technological standard for campaign jets. Judicial appointments were the most racially and gender diverse at the time. A devout Christian, he struggled with abortion but later supported same-sex marriage. The amazing work he did with eradicating Guinea worm. He spent just short of 90 seconds inside a nuclear reactor in a meltdown. Wow. A lot of talk, rightfully so, about Jimmy Carter. Again, Jonathan Alter on Carter is going to join us at 2:05. But a really good hour coming up. We'll have fun. Susie's here. Overrated, underrated, properly rated. And Robert Smith, one of the two or three greatest running backs in Vikings history and outstanding as an interview. Robert Smith on its Vikings, 1:35 here on CCO.